podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Scoutcast. My name is Joe.
And my name is Seb.
My name is David.
Welcome everyone and welcome back to the Scoutcast, David. We were together this morning for the captaincy video, but it's been a while since you've done a captaincy video, and definitely a while since you've done the Scoutcast. And that's because we've effectively been having two game weeks pretty much every week. So you've been busy running a site. Seb, what is coming up on the show?
Well, you mentioned it's two games every week or two game weeks every week. Now it's a double game week in a week. When is it not?
Yeah.
So Leeds and Southampton are the teams involved in that first off. So we're going to have a little look at them, focusing on their teams and players. We'll also discuss the players that we could be sacrificing in the future to plan for future double game weeks. The shields, as you like to term it, Joe, those big players that maybe we could lose and make some gains. Of course, we'll frisk the next four fixtures. David's got a differential for us after your great success, Joe. And we'll finish off, of course, with a look at transfers, captaincies. But first up, I think our points from last week.
Yes, indeed. So, there's going to be no rough with the smooth this week, just because we're sort of technically still in the middle of a game week. We've got the second half of the double game week to go. But for many of us, there might not be much more points. So I'll go first. So I've got 100 points. But effectively, I've got a 99-point single game week. Because my first, I've got Antonio, and he was not playing. I've got Calvert-Lewin as my first sub. He was not playing for both of them. So it goes down to Dallas for minus one. So I've got 100 minus one, plus I have Edison still to play, Loughton still to play, and Stone still to play. And it looks like my captain Gundogan won't play. So I can't complain, though. I'm not going to complain about this. 100 points, my second century of the season. So very, very pleased with that. For those listening on the podcast, I've got Edison, Loughton, Koufal, Stones, Grealish, Fernandez, Salah, Gundogan was my captain, Suchek, Antonio not playing, and then Bamford. And then I just talked about my bench there. I moved Justin out for Loughton, which proved profitable. I got him for two reasons. One, his cost. He was the cheapest of the Burnley defenders. And to be honest, I thought a lot of the Burnley defenders, apart from Pope, are pretty much of a muchness. If you're betting on me or Tarkowski getting a goal, you never know when that's going to come. If you're betting on Loughton getting a goal, you've got to wait maybe 8 years between goals. I got the timing right on that one. I actually, it was an article that Tom had done on Fantasy Football Scout about differentials, and he was talking about Loughton's increasing attacking intent and attacking threat. So it was partially looking at that, looking at costs, and I thought, he's the one for me. So very pleased with that. Obviously, Justin didn't play. I don't think I'm going to get much more than that. If Edison is probably my best bet, Stones could get rotated. Gundogan's not playing. Loughton in a defence without me, maybe a couple of points. Yeah, if I can get to 110, I'll be really, really chuffed. But, obviously I'll happily take a little bit over 100. Moving on to you, Seb, not too shabby either. 90 points, but crucially, you might well have your captain playing. So you wildcarded, and this was your final wildcard team. And I'll just, for the benefit of those listening on the podcast, Pope, Cancelo, Loughton, well done. Loughton. Dean, Shaw, Sterling is your captain. Gundogan, Fernandez, Bamford, Watkins and Ings. You can tell you wildcard. This is a well set up squad for the next few weeks. And on your bench, Martinez, Rafinha, who was my differential last week, Son and Luke Ayling. You've got nothing. So we've actually got technically 1 point more than Dallas. You must be delighted with that. That's a wildcard success because it looks good going forward. And you're looking there with 90 points so far.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased. I would say the only disappointment really would be Luca Dean. We maybe expected the Fulham match to be where he gets points. So I'm looking forward to him getting negative points overall when City score 8. But realistically, what's that? One that hasn't hit in the entire wild card. So I'll certainly take that. No complaints from me. Like I say, I think Loughton was was lucky. I made that move for price reasons. There was some good analysis on him maybe being more attacking.
Yeah.
But a bit like Ben Mee and Tarkowski, his chances of a return probably went from 2% to 3%. And the goal he scored was amazing. I don't think I'm going to claim that I saw that coming, because I certainly didn't.
No.
And then, yeah, Captain Sterling, I think it was pretty close between him and Gundogan. Obviously, before the fact, we thought Gundogan might have lost penalties, and Sterling's stats over the last few were very similar, if not slightly superior to Gundogan.
Yeah.
So I was happy to stick it on him. And again, maybe I've got a bit lucky with Gundogan being injured. If Sterling can bring me some points, if they score about the same, good times.
Yes, indeed. Let's move on to you, David. So a little bit behind, but you know, Sterling captain to go, so you never know. So you got 70 points, and you got Pope, Maguire, Cancelo, Koufal, Dallas in your starting 11, so minus one there. Sterling captain, Fernandes, Gundogan, Salah, Bamford, and then Antonio. But you've got Target coming in, so you haven't got 70 points at the moment. You've 76 points. Sorry. So yeah, you must be fairly pleased with that, because you got all those other players hopefully going to start.
Yeah, I'm relatively, well, I was a lot happier with how I did in this game week until I saw how you guys got on.
Okay.
But it does rather look like that Matt Lowton was really the difference, like, in terms of so far. Mm. Like, if I've won 76 points, and the reason I want to start with him is obviously I don't own him. I had no structure with which to get him. I was quite happy with my five defenders for this game week anyway. But I don't want to hear you doing yourself down on Lowton, because it's not just about about him. We also did another article on site last week about Crystal Palace's defence on the left-hand side that was just absolutely dreadful and has been for some time. So everyone is all sort of shocked. And yes, it's his first goal in a very long time. But I'm not surprised to see him get something.
Mm.
You know, him having time and space in that area of the pitch, it was predictable, in my opinion, because we predicted it last week. Mm. So loads of owners, even if you didn't think about that, you know, there was still some logic to it, even if you weren't aware of it. So don't consider it luck. Consider it skill.
I'll take it.
That's good. For those listening and watching, what David just said there is classic David. It's pinpointing a weakness in a particular side and a particular attacking threat in another side. And then you can help a lot with captaincy, which is what we talked about this morning as well. So do have a look at the captaincy video. So it's full of lots of nuggets like that. Because there's no rough with the smooth this week, we'll that'll be back next week, I think, it may not be, because we might still be in the middle of a game week then, but we shall find out. So we can just move straight on for the topic. So it's a double game week. Leeds and Southampton. It's their turn to play twice. So these are the teams with players that we should be targeting. So Leeds, 40 goals they've got. So they're a top five attack this season, but they've also conceded 42 goals, so it's the second worst. So what you're getting with them is massive excitement, and that's why Leeds are sort of everyone's favourite second team at the moment. It's just goals. Seb, lead us through the Leeds chat.
Well, they are my favourite first team, but yeah. So as you beautifully set us up there, I think we are 11th in the table as we stand. And we seem to score as many as we concede, quite literally. Mm. And that doesn't really seem to change that much based on the opponent. Although I would like to have a look at that in a moment. With Wolves and Southampton coming up, we've got a few questions on how we can target Leeds and what we should be looking at in the week ahead. So we have a question from Karim. Which of Dallas or Rafinha is the better player to bring in, given Bamford will be in many teams already? Rafinha, the better prospect, but can Dallas be explosive? From Luke, Captain Bamford or Dallas, or a safer single game week like Salah or Fernandes? And then from Tony Awesome, should we triple up on Leeds players? I think a few of us already are, probably, especially for those who don't pan to wildcard, so not me there, until game week 30, as they do play in game week 29, the blank week, which is probably something to keep in mind.
Just for those watching, I put some stats up on the screen. So as Seb's talking, have a look at those. These are for the last four game weeks. And they show those stats there. So we'll draw on them as we chat. But there are those stats there. And it shows that Bamford and Rafinha are top in terms of certain attacking metrics. But yes, sorry, carry on, Seb.
Well, sure. I mean, I could talk about this for an hour and a half. So you jump in and shut me up. But I think there's probably a few ways to attack this question. The first being looking at Leeds overall as a team. Then looking at our attack. So Bamford, Harrison, Rafinha, maybe a bit of Dallas. And then the defence. We've got Phillips, Strauch, and then the Dallas versus Ayling question. First off then, if we look at Leeds as a team, something I wanted to highlight Now, this is, of course, subjective because I'm going to call it our best 11. But at the beginning of the season, when we signed our players and lined up, what would we think our best 11 might be this season? It would be Melier in goal, Luke Ayling at right back, Coco Llorente at right centre back, Cooper at left centre back, Dallas at left back, Phillips in the holding role, a midfield of Rafinha on the right, Harrison on the left, Click and Rodrigo probably in the middle, and then Bamford up front. Now, there are, of course, debates over whether that is our best team now. We know Dallas is in midfield. That's not so much the conversation I'm looking to have, more the fact that that team I've just read out hasn't played together yet this season. We haven't played a single match where we, in theory, have our best players out. Now, this comes into the conversation about, you know, whether we're playing well, whether we're playing badly, who can take advantage of us, because I think it is important to remember, especially the defence, probably hasn't been first choice at all, or if only a few matches. Now, we know Calvin Phillips and Strauch are important in that role, and we know they play it slightly differently. But before coming on to that, I wanted to look at how teams can attack us, and maybe if we can predict with Wolves and Southampton in mind, whether we're going to be able to beat them or whether they'll score some goals against us. I think something that we can fall foul of here is that kind of match of the day analysis, which I don't mean that to any discredit to match of the day. It's more they've got 5 or 10 minutes to make a point. So they have to pick one thing and really focus on it. For example, Pascal Strauch replacing Phillips. That's their thing, and that sounds like the whole reason. That is heavily based on maybe traditional analysis of teams, especially at the top level, where they all play zonal, and there's loads of different tactics. But Leeds are probably quite different, especially in the way we set up man-to-man marking at the back throughout the entire team. So when you're looking at, say, oh, Pascal Strauch did or didn't play well at the weekend, his job was effectively to mark Martin Odegaard. Martin Odegaard wasn't in that match. Strauch did a very good job. Phillips could offer more maybe going forward in particular, but defensively, we have seen Phillips as well be very suspect in certain matches. He started the match against Man United in which we lost 6-2 and was subbed off at halftime for Strauch, and it was 1-1 in the second half, I think. So I think it's less about necessarily always our personnel and who they're up against. Scott McTominay, we saw, scored 1-2 goals against us, I think. He was bursting through the middle and making Calvin Phillips probably look quite poor. That wasn't necessarily down to Phillips because it wasn't his job to mark him. It was the team in general. And we've seen Arsenal put an awesome amount of pressure on us in the first 15 minutes, really focusing on Alioski, who's playing left back. I would prefer to have Dallas there, but we need him in the midfield, who is not good under pressure. And as teams have worked out recently, if you can have your centre-back split quite wide and play past Patrick Bamford, which they did very, very well at the weekend with David Luiz and Gabriel, you then expose our midfield and you outnumber us and you can really carry the ball forward through the middle and hurt us. And I think that's what we're seeing. So, to shut up for a second, the main question on team is, do we think Southampton and Wolves can do that to us? I would say Wolves no, Southampton maybe.
Okay, now that is interesting.
I think Southampton is a team that that can do that. I think the Wolves play very wide and they like to use their wing-back system a lot more, whereas Southampton very much thrive off a narrow formation, don't they? They, on paper, it's a 4-4-2, but in reality, it's a 4-2-2-2, where the wingers sometimes support the strikers almost like number 10s and they cut inside. And we were talking about on the captaincy video earlier, actually, in terms of if we just look at the last four matches in isolation, Leeds have conceded more chances through the middle than any other team. And of course, as you mentioned there, three of those games are games where Phillips was in the team. And it's interesting that the when you talk about Phillips in terms of understanding the what it means for them to have him and to not have him. And it's and it is more than just tackles made and how he defends, because the way I see it when I watch Leeds play is he almost defends by what he does with the ball. He defends by his decision making in terms of when he passes, how he passes and how he moves it along. A little bit like how Man City would defend by making sure the other team just doesn't see the ball, because they've got a whole team of Calvin Phillips, effectively, you know, players who can make defence splitting passes. So he draws away that pressure from the back four quite a lot. If you're in a situation of pressure, he won't be necessarily the guy that wins the ball, but he'll be the guy that will play the ball from the CDM position all the way out to Rafinha or Harrison or what have you. So it's an interesting debate that, as you say, it's more than just what maybe match they can show you. We've got time to talk about more things than that.
Well, I've got some stats up on the screen that you sent over earlier about looking at Leeds with Phillips and without Phillips.
So that's it's a little bit outdated. I didn't have a time to completely update this. This is from the first 9 game weeks of the season, and it shows where in the first 5 game weeks they had him in the team, and in game weeks 6, 7, and 8. Oh no, sorry, it's game weeks 1 through 5 and 9 on the left. versus game week 6, 7, and 8 on the right. And I will absolutely caveat this with the fact that it was a while ago. I have some other more up to date numbers in a second, but it is quite scary the difference that is made. And as has already been mentioned, like it won't just be about this particular factor, but I do think that there is definitely an element of when he's not there, not protecting them with the way that he moves the ball, you end up with these scenarios where, just to pull it up again, yeah. So they basically end up conceding fewer chances, but the chances they concede are bigger. So you'll see that the goal attempts conceded in the box went down in those games where he wasn't there. But then if you come all the way down to big chances conceded, they basically nearly doubled. So they went from 1.7 with him in the team conceded to 3.7 without him in the team. And the scary thing is that sometimes when a team concedes some of these bigger chances, they end up putting more blocks in because there's bigger chances that pop up. But even the CBIs went down as well. And just to bring that more up to date in terms of the last few weeks, it's been a similar trend. So I've gone with game week range 20 to 23 when they had him in the team compared with the Arsenal game, which is a bit risky, of course. It is just one game, and Arsenal, they can be a good team. It was, same story. They conceded fewer shots, but they conceded bigger chances. So they conceded 1.8 big chances per game when he was there for game weeks 20, 21, 22 and 23. And then against Arsenal, they conceded 3. So for me, like, if we're talking about them as a team and how exactly we spread our coverage, with this risk at the moment that he's not going to be there, and then, of course, the knock-on effect that has on other areas of the team, and Seb's already alluded to the fact that the back four just hasn't been the first choice for some time. You know, you really want to be able to have Dallas and Ayling as the fullbacks rather than having to rely for Ayling in the middle. I do think that the fact that the injuries seem to be popping up and kind of chopping and there's just been a lot of chopping and changing. Like, if he could sit down and have Alioski on the left and Ayling in the middle, and some of this makeshift back four, but could have that in place for like 20 game weeks, it'd probably do better than coming back and then going out again, and the same with Llorente. So that obviously is all a big thing. So all of these factors are making me feel like I wouldn't want to be getting anyone other than, if I didn't have Dallas right now, I don't know if I'd necessarily sign him. It comes down to, of course, your chip strategy, which I suppose perhaps is maybe another question. But for me, I've got a wild card in place, so I know that I'm probably going to wild card before that blank game week. So it means that, if I was advising someone who's in the same chip scenario as me and didn't have Dallas, I wouldn't necessarily be going after him, because I do think that there's the risk, as we saw this week, of a minus one when I foolishly started him thinking that Phillips was going to be okay. that can happen. So for me, it's considerably more about the attack in this team for these two game weeks, because they have shown that they can still score goals when they're not necessarily at their full strength. Just to go through a couple of other things we talked about earlier on the captaincy video. In the 5 games they've not had Phillips in the team this year, they've conceded 4 goals in 3 of those. You've got the Leicester game, the Palace game, and then the Arsenal game. But they've still scored goals in those games. Mm. So Bamford's hat-trick came at Villa Park when Strout, I think, came off inside 10 minutes because he was having a horrible game. I think Shackleton came on to replace him. So we know Bamford can still do something when Phillips isn't there. They've scored in all of these games where Phillips wasn't there, apart from the Brighton one, which was game week 19. We did look at a little bit on the captaincy video that, annoyingly, Bamford only had one shot against Arsenal, and no Leeds player had more than one shot in that game, which is a little bit frustrating. But at the same time, Arsenal have actually defended quite well statistically this year, so I wasn't too shocked by that. What we did see, of course, was that Rafinha was top of that whole game for chances created. So with him, I think, again, if they don't have Phillips, that doesn't mean that Rafinha can't provide what he does normally, which is, of course, fantastic energy from open play, but of course he takes their corners as well. So those two players, for me, the team setup, it doesn't impact them in quite the same way if it's not full strength than it does a Melier or a Dallas or an Ayling.
What we all as fantasy managers want to know is, how far do we go with Leeds? Do we treble up on them? And if so, which three? And which one do we captain, possibly? So, Seb, what would you say is the optimal three Leeds? Why and which would you captain?
I guess, of course, it does depend on your situation a little bit, because we know we play in 29 as well. So if you don't have a free hit or your strategy needs you to have players available for 29, you probably do want three of our players. If I had, just say, a free hit now, a free hit, I'd probably go for Rafinha, Harrison and Bamford.
Okay.
Just for the most attacking players that have good numbers behind them and are likely to return. I have Luke Ayling, Bamford and Rafinha. I like Rafinha and Bamford a lot. I would recommend everyone has them. And then it's just your third option. And if you don't have a defender, maybe you opt out. We know Dallas is playing in midfield and he will continue there. I think while I prefer we had either a proper left back or a proper number eight, that's really the thing we're lacking. We talk about Phillips and Strauch. We are really lacking someone who can do that eight role next to either Dallas or Clink in the way that, say, Rodrigo De Paul is a player we've looked at in the past, you know, that good transitional creative player, but also can press. So Dallas will play there and he's probably the one you'd want. But looking at Ayling and Dallas, if they were both to play, say, Ayling always at right back and Dallas at centre mid or left back, I think it's a lot closer than anyone really thinks. I was having a little look in the week at the whole season numbers for us. And this is, obviously Ayling's played centre back here a lot as well. XGI over the entire season has Dallas at 3.91 and Ayling at 3.45. Ayling has no attacking returns and Dallas has six, I believe. So that's arguably an overperformance or an underperformance from Luke Ayling. When he's at right back, we are a much better team because we have that outlet that we need on that right-hand side and he will get very far forward himself. I was looking at some position maps as well. And rather than describing a heat map, which I've tried in the past, we'll look at the average position maps, which you can see in the members area on Fantasy Football Scout. Now, Dallas has played just everywhere. It is dots all over the page. He's played anywhere on the pitch, left back, right wing, centre mid. Game week 23 in our last match, he was bang in the middle, centre mid. He was slightly further back than Click, and he will be the slightly more defensive one, but we know that maybe doesn't matter. He's going to get forward anyway. Luke Ayling is the interesting one. He is almost as far forward when he does play right back, obviously out on the right-hand side. But we see when he's playing centre back, he naturally slips into that more centre back position, still quite advanced, probably a bit similar to Azpilicueta would look for Chelsea. So it's maybe about nailing how we think they're going to line up versus which opponent. Wolves, they played 3-5-2 versus us last time. So Luke Ayling was in a back three. I think they're playing 3-4-3 at the moment. So I would expect Luke Ayling maybe to be right back if Calvin Phillips is back. If he's not, we know it'll look more like this week and the defence is weaker. Dallas will play centre mid no matter what. Southampton is the interesting one. Southampton play two up front and I don't think they'll change that. So I think Luke Ayling will be right centre back in a back three. So despite having Ayling myself for the price, I'd probably avoid him for this coming fixtures.
I mean, I must admit, I owned Ayling previously in the season. And when he did play fullback, I was delighted. He always looked very like I was going to get an assist. I was going to get some kind of attacking return. But then when he was moved into more centre back role, nah, it just wasn't there. But yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think I signed him the week he went to centre back. Yeah. But I signed him, and then the injury happened in the game. Was it when Cock came out?
Yeah.
I just remember signing Ayling for many of the reasons that Seb's already alluded to about the fact that when they do play fullback, they are in very similar positions higher up the pitch, and Ayling has come so close on so many occasions this year when he was playing right back, and then that's just a scenario sometimes you can't control in FPL. It's like you made a good decision at the time and then just something completely outside of your control puts your marauding right back at centre back. Is
For sure.
For the benefit of those listening on the podcast version, the stats we got up on the screen last four game weeks, they show that Bamford is top in terms of shots on target with 7, then Rafinha with 6, and then Harrison with 5. In terms of shots, in terms of minutes per baseline bonus. So this is the bonus they get aside from goals, assists and clean sheets. So passing, tackling, creating chances, etc. Bamford is getting a baseline bonus point in the bonus point system every 13 minutes or so. Rafinha every 10 minutes or so. And Harrison just under every 10 minutes. In terms of chances created, it's Bamford and Rafinha again. 7. Each, they're top. Then Harrison with 4. Dallas has created 4 chances and he's had 5 shots in terms of shots on target, a couple of them on target there. It shows that Dallas is capable of doing that. I mean, I have him in my team. If I had a blank slate, I would go for those top 3, Bamford, Rafinha and Harrison. I think the fixtures are there for them. But I have Dallas, so I'm going to go into that with Dallas. I have Bamford. I'm going to get Rafinha. I wouldn't say he's a must. I think he's a very, very good differential. And he was only, we put him in the differentials last week, and he was under 3%, 2 point something percent. ridiculously low owned.
I can't believe he's not been noticed. I feel like normally, I think Gundogan in a way has kind of like shadowed him a little bit, because fantasy managers like worldwide, they absolutely love someone in that price bracket, kind of like knocking on their door every week, like doing stuff that they notice. You know, it's not like, because a lot of the casual managers won't look at some of the stuff that we're looking at. They just look at who scored the goal. So they've looked at Gundogan doing that. It's just mad that Rafinha has obviously not been as good as Gundogan, but in terms of value, it's incredible. And he's just still going unnoticed. So I think sometimes people worry that, oh, everyone's getting this guy. Because if you look inside the fantasy bubble, we're all talking about Rafinha as a must-have.
Hardly anyone's got him. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. He's such a powerful asset for this
week. If let's say Bamford blanks in both those fixtures and Rafinha scores a couple of goals and an assist, and he's, if you captained him, your green arrow will be huge, because unfortunately we have to look, and we spoke about this in the captaincy video, effective ownership. Bamford is already hugely owned. He's in the top 10 players that are owned in the game. Most of those, because of the double game week, will captain him. His effective ownership will probably be over 100%, certainly over 100% in the top 10,000 managers, probably in the top 100,000. But Rafinha won't be. He will be that differential. So that's what you're looking at, really. Do you want, what size of green arrow do you want? What risk do you want with that? So in terms of what size of green arrow do you want, what size of red arrow are you prepared to take? And if Bamford goes absolutely mad with goals, and somehow Rafinha doesn't, then, you know, it's going to be bad.
It's a little bit shield and sword, I think.
Yes.
Combining the two of them. I think if you're looking at your team and thinking you've got Bamford and you're going to captain him and that's going to do nothing for you, you know, the chances of there being, you know, goal Bamford, assist Rafinha, or vice versa, are quite high. And so then if you combine your shield of captain Bamford with Rafinha, who, yeah, statistically looks really nice. I mean, we were joking earlier because we saw that on minutes per expected goal involvement for the last four matches, you think about how many variables go into that metric. Bamford and Rafinha's minutes per expected goal involvement for the last four matches is the exact same number. It's crazy. They're both one every 165.9 minutes. So, and he's a midfield player. So his points potential arguably is a little bit higher than Bamford's. But we can't forget that Bamford's going to be massively captain. Yeah. But Rafinha, for me, you said he's not a must. I think he is. I mean, I don't know if I've got room for him myself, but if I don't get a chance to get him, I'm going to be quite scared.
If you don't get Rafinha, so...
If you have room to make that transfer, I would argue. Well, should.
The most popular move will be Souček to Rafinha. I think all Souček owners will be considering that at the least. If Gundogan is out for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I'll make that move as well.
Yeah, Gundogan is the only one because I don't know. I'm really scared of selling Fernandes or Salah. I'm scared of selling someone so reliable.
Well, funny you should say, because we'll talk about that in detail in a bit.
Gundogan really is the only one I can... I'm actually 0.1 away from getting Rafinha from selling Anguissa. It's like, are you serious? Like, I might be able to take a hit to get Rafinha in for him and play 3-5-2 or something. That might be the only way, because it just depends how long Gundogan's out for, and we don't know that yet. No. We might know more later in the week. Yeah. KDB could be back soon, so maybe that's something that puts people off him, so...
I have Sterling for that very reason.
Before we move on to talk about Southampton, Seb, was there anything else you wanted to add about Leeds?
Just on the captaincy there, I normally argue that don't look at ownership. It doesn't matter. You know, predict the points and captain that player. As you've both put wonderfully, I think it's so close between those two that maybe this is the week where you just make your decision based on ownership. You know, Rafinha is low owned, Bamford is high owned. You take that as your risk and reward dictates.
I mean,
and then just on. Oh, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, you as a Leeds fan, as a layman looking at Leeds, I'm not a professor of Leeds. If Rafinha does well, chances are probably Bamford scored somewhere. Bamford does well, chances are Rafinha's done. They sort of assist or score for each other. That's what it looks like. Is that? Am I being too simplistic
quite possibly. Obviously, Harrison is in there too.
Yeah.
And I would have wanted to mention something on him in a moment. One thing to note is that Rafinha is on a lot of our set pieces. He was, off the top of my head, I think he was taking them all from the right, and Phillips was taking them from the left, but he has now taken over on the left, possibly, at least partially. We saw Strouk have two or three really good chances in our last match. And then against Arsenal, he scored a brilliant header. all of those were put in by Rafinha, I believe. Yeah. So maybe there's a slight edge there where if he's on set pieces, of course, we believe Bamford is on penalties, click traditionally, but Bamford took the last one. So maybe that's the toss-up, just you think. You know, we could look at David's research and see if either Wolves or Southampton are liable to scoring from a towering header, because Rafinha might assist that. But honestly, I think it's so close. And then Harrison being the third wheel there, he's good. If you wanted a third player who isn't a defender, go for it. I know, David, you pointed out on the captain video about Southampton's weakness down the right-hand side especially.
Yeah, that's right. I think you name-checked me there, and I was thinking, right, where's my table gone? I'll go pull it back up. If we're looking at where it could happen, then it could be that right flank. Walker Peters is a doubt again. It's been a massive problem for them this year because they just seem to have no depth there, and they've even like sold fullbacks because they've had Vokins come and play on the left. It's always been a big issue when Walker Peters hasn't been fit. And it's staggering how stark the difference is between those two sides. So they conceded 8 down the left last 4, they conceded 9 through the middle, which is kind of like not too bad, top half of the league for both of those. 17 down the right-hand side, third worst in the league. So then, of course, that's where we would expect Harrison to play. So I wish that, because in this debate, everyone's talking about Rafinha and not many people talking about Harrison. Normally, when that's the case, the one who's not being talked about, Harrison, is the cheaper one. So I was thinking, oh, yeah, OK, well, I can't get Rafinha, I'll get Harrison. Like, oh, great, well, he's more expensive as well. So, yeah, it will be tricky necessarily to go Harrison over Rafinha. But if you were to do that, I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world, because he could have a bit of a field day.
So let me give you one thing on that then. So I pretty much agree with you, but with a couple of small caveats of Harrison and Rafinha have swapped sides a couple of times in the last few matches. If you look at their touch maps, they do have touches on the opposite side. Harrison was obviously subbed off last match as part of the changes that did improve the match for us. Although I will say 4-0 up, Arsenal didn't need to keep pressing us like they were. So of course we improved. But Rafinha actually moved to the left then with Helder Costa coming on the right. So there is a chance you'll see Rafinha on the left. And on Harrison himself, his last 2 goals, I believe, certainly his last goal, came straight down the middle. So if he's up against a weak fullback, that might be more for the assists. For the actual goals, we might see him making those runs through the middle. So I think realistically, I mean, what's the crux of this conversation? It's all quite close. Get the 3 attackers if you can. If you can't, get Bamford and Rafinha, really.
Yeah. There we go.
And then the last thing I just wanted to update us before I shut up for a bit is a few people in the chat have mentioned injuries and whatnot. And Paul has kept pointing out as well that Rafinha's a top 4 player. It's nonsense. He's terrible. Please leave him alone. He's terrible. We want to keep him. But on injuries, it's been pointed out that Berardi's back soon. That's true. Although I don't know how close he'll be to playing a match. He's been out for a very, very long time. And Koch and Llorente, I think, are about 2 or 3 weeks respectively away from their return. So we're probably safe for this double, assuming that those players won't affect the lineup. Going forward, they may well do.
Okay, let's move on to Southampton. So they have 2 fixtures, not as favourable, though, against Chelsea and, of course, Leeds themselves. So I've got some stats up on the screen. Once again, these are the last 4 game weeks, and we'll talk about these stats as we go. But that shows, guess who is top of goal attempts? It's of course Danny Ings. So he's a player I'm sure we'll be mentioning. David, Southampton. They're an odd one, aren't they? Can be hammered, can be anyone.
Well, before I start on Southampton, I will just say that there's no way I'm going to be able to match Seb's level of analysis of this team, because not only do I not support them, I'm a Reading fan, so I don't even like them that much. I don't hate them, but at the same time, I don't love them either. So, apologies if this doesn't meet the same level. It's a tough act to follow. Tough act to follow indeed.
It's cheating. I'd steal all my opinions from Leeds podcasts.
Well, I mean, but they're Leeds podcasts you want to listen to. I don't listen to Southampton podcasts. I'm not even sorry about that. But yeah, as you say, Joe, they are unpredictable. I do enjoy watching them as a neutral because, you never know what you're going to get. They're capable of being impressive, but also laughably poor in some of the games they've played. Of course, you know, a lot of it comes down to injuries as well. We've seen quite a lot of them this season. But they do still have 2 games, so we've got to think about them. Chelsea and Leeds, obviously, is who they're playing. About as diametrically opposite types of games you could get in terms of a team that loves playing an open style that often opens the door for you as the opponent versus a team that has done really well defensively, especially under their new manager. But we've still got people considering yeah, than for the captaincy. So Luke Porsche says, is Ings the best captaincy option? FPL GNG says, is Redmond a potential differential now he's playing as a striker? And I'm so glad this question is in here, Joe, because I'm sure you've got some opinions on Nathan Redmond.
Yes,
plenty of times.
He's the hero of the goals imminent table. He's a permanent fixture. One day his goal will come. It did actually when I got him in. A couple of seasons ago, I think I was in a hospital bed.
Was it near the end of the season?
that was when I was hospitalised, and in my crazed state, I got Nathan Redmond in. That's how delirious I was. I got him in towards the end of the season. Magically, he kept scoring. So,
Redmond could be an interesting one. Maybe not so much from attacking Southampton point of view, from Leeds defence. As mentioned, Alioski is probably the weak link there. He cannot deal with being under pressure. He's probably our one player who can't. You know, that's kind of Bielsa's way. We've got a system that works, and we probably just need better players because we match up one-on-one across the pitch. We lose the good players. But on Redmond, I wonder if he's one of those players, especially if he ends up pulling out right from that centre-forward position, who could maybe hurt us. He could probably beat Alioski, I'd imagine. And as we've seen with us, when one individual beats one of our individuals, they're often through.
It's a double game week. And who are the heroes of the double game week? It's John Stones. It's Matt Loughton. It could be Nathan Redmond.
It could be. I'll come back to Redmond in a minute because I do just love that he's come up again because I know that it's such a great narrative there with you, Joe. I love that one. I'll start us off on the Ings question because I think that's something people are considering a little bit more seriously, dare I say it, than Nathan Redmond. My view on the Ings situation is that I'll kind of go back to what I said before about I look at this double game week for Southampton almost like not a double game week, but a game week and a half in sort of a similar way that some people looked at Everton's double game week. And of course, they ended up losing to Fulham anyway. But when we were preparing for it, it was very much like one great game, which they, you know, fluffed, but and then a very tough game. So if they're not going to play, you know, the Calvert-Lewin thing, if he's not going to play in the second one, should I hold them? That was last week's talking point. So then for me, that underpins this as well. Chelsea's defence has been so good since Tuchel came along in the way that they have sort of changed their shape, gone to a 3-4-3, it's created some impressive results in terms of the statistics that are there. So the last four matches, they're second only to Man City for big chances conceded. They are second only to Man City for shots on target conceded. Goals in the box conceded, they're second. And then their XGC for the last four matches is just 2.01, which actually is only 0.21. Worse off than Man City, 1.8. So the actual difference between the way they performed in those games has been massive. Now, Man City have had harder games, so it's more impressive that they've got that good record as well as Chelsea. Chelsea have had some appealing opponents. But for me, that just makes it really hard for me to look at, say, Bamford and Rafinha, who we've just waxed lyrical about what they're capable of doing. Southampton's defence, by the way, isn't great, so they're going to have. I think that Leeds will have a lot to do against Southampton. A lot of enjoyment getting attacking returns, and they can definitely get stuff against Wolves. With Southampton against Chelsea, I look at that and think no, thank you. So then, if anything, it's a bit of a hyperbolic thing to say, but I almost see Ings as almost like a single game week option just because of how good this Chelsea defence is. What do you think, Seb?
I mean, I have Ings, and fortunately he scored last week, so that feels a bit like, you know, money in the bank. I'd probably agree with you. It feels a bit like a single game week. If anything, I'd probably have him for future doubles, or at least navigating those fixtures. I had Calvert-Lewin, I think we probably all did, and I needed a replacement. And Ings, some people I think are quite a fan of him in the community. I know he's had some big chances recently, which he missed, and he's scored, looked a bit sharper. But really what it came down to for me was having Ings because he fit that Calvert-Lewin hole. He could become Kane. He could have some more doubles. And I think, as you say, would you maybe stretch to McCarthy? But maybe even not, because if he doesn't make saves, you could easily concede a couple in each match.
I'm with you. Ings is definitely on my list. And I think his future double game, which could be nice. It's just, yeah, in that with the captaincy, it's almost not necessarily about how well I think he's going to do in one game. It's just the Leeds ones for me. They're just it's no comparison really. Is the way I see it. What about you, Joe? What are you thinking on Danny?
Well, I've got two transfers, free transfers for this coming week. As I said, Rafinha is a top target. If I want to use the second transfer, it's only really going to be for Danny Ings, and I'm looking at Danny Ings for the favourable Wolves game, for the off chance of 2 points against Chelsea, but also the fact that he may then have a double game week in 26. He may then have another double game week at some point, 27, 28. So he's an investment for the short term. And also, looking at the stats, we'll look at the next four fixtures coming up. Southampton are doing a top at the moment. So in terms of, they've got very favourable fixtures the next few matches. So I think this is probably a good rule of thumb for all double game week players. Would you get them in? Are you getting them in just for the double game week? Are you getting them in for other reasons, other fixtures to come? For example, Rafinha, Bamford, get these players in because they play in 29 and they're Leeds. They're attacking a lot. So they've got lots of fixtures coming up, which you can use them for. That's the same, I think, with Southampton. I like the look of Danny Ings in general at the moment. And Southampton have been recovering from a lot of injuries. Having Vestergaard back, obviously Bednarek there, feel a bit happier with Southampton. I think they will concede more, but I just think their flow as a team is helped by having the regular players back. Walker Peters out could be a problem, but yeah, Danny Ings. Looking at the stats, three big chances created, three big chances in total. Sorry, he's created five chances, had eight goal attempts. Scored a goal and four of his shots been on target. I mean, you know what you're getting with Danny Ings. He's a lethal finisher. He's just shy of being on the goals imminence table, even though he did score last week. The goals imminence table would still has players that have only scored once in four matches. So Danny Ings is heading into that territory, those sorts of stats, as in he's sort of technically due more. Redmond is interesting. Created seven chances, seven goal attempts. He is a very intriguing differential because he's favoured up front at the moment. So he is with Ward-Prowse. What are you getting there? You're getting those amazing set pieces, but you look at corners, 17 he's taken. He is the set piece man at Southampton. And Armstrong is interesting, but I don't think Armstrong can compete with Rafinha. He certainly can't compete with Gundogan. So that's where I think they're going to miss out. So I think for me, it's Ings or nothing. But I wouldn't captain Ings. I still think a Leeds player is better. I like Ings.
Ward-Prowse one doesn't really feel like a double game week pick because, like you say, if his threat is set pieces, predicting those is a lot tougher. You probably have to take, you know, a group of 10 game weeks and say, okay, I'll expect a return at some point there. Trying to pinpoint it in two matches might be quite difficult to do.
I mean, the Vestergaard is back, which definitely helps because he was a very consistent threat. And he went on a good scoring run, actually. So maybe now more than a couple of weeks ago, maybe there's something there, Ward-Prowse. But I know what you mean. Sometimes it can be easy to be like, oh, I'll just get the corner taker because in a raw sense, they end up actually creating lots of chance. I took that approach with set piece takers for a long time in a way that didn't get you as many returns as you'd expect. As you kind of mentioned there, you sometimes have to look at it over like a 20 match period and you can't really afford to give a player that much time sometimes.
It feels like a bonus rather than a reason, right? If you like a player and then they have set pieces, that's something on top.
It's a bit like penalties as well sometimes, penalties is a more stronger reason to go with someone. But how often do we look at a player and go, he's doing this in open play and he's also on penalties? And Rafinha, for example, he is perfect on that because we can see what he does from open play and the corners is a bonus. So, yeah, I know what you mean on Ward-Prowse. Moving on, I guess, to the Redmond question, I had a little bit of a look at to try and find some data that backed up my general opinion of Redmond, which I know that Joe will mostly agree with, apart from the period where he was really helpful from him, is that he just strikes me as a massive underperformer. Like, he's the guy that will get into some really nice positions and put it wide, hit the post. He just seems to love hitting the woodwork. So I went back over the last three seasons and looked at how he's doing so far this season for underperformance versus expected goal involvement. And it was quite scary. Like, you don't trust this guy. You sooner would trust a guy that is overperforming against their XG over a 4-year period because it shows you that they're a quality player versus a guy who's underperforming, shows you they're getting good positions and they can't finish the dinner. So in the 17-18 season, his XGI delta was -1.26. In 18-19, it was -3.43. I mean, that's just huge.
So he's expected to get goals taken off him by the end of the season.
Minus
goals.
Because of the big chances he was missing. And then, so last season, he actually overperformed against his expected goal involvement by +0.22, but his XG underperformance was -1.11. So it meant that most of his overperformance was on the assist. And then so far this season, it's -1.81. So he still is a guy that you just can't trust. And the other, in terms of trust, I don't know how long he's going to play up front, because it's not like Southampton don't have people waiting in the wings to play centre forward. Like, Shea Adams has kind of weirdly kind of dropped out of favour, despite having played, I think, relatively well as a team player. Seems to have dropped out.
See, his last, what these stats show with Adams, he's only had 2 starts in the last 4. But he's created more big
chances. He's done a hell of a lot in them, hasn't he?
He's had more big chances than any other Southampton player, and created 4 chances as well. So, you know, he is someone whose underlying stats suggest that he could get something. But once again, as you said,
he could easily come back in, and Redmond isn't up front anymore. I just think that risk is there. So then, in terms of, but who else to talk about? I do think someone who's going a little bit under the radar is Takumi Minamino. He hasn't played too much yet, but when you consider what he represents, in terms of a lone player from a big club who's got Champions League experience, like, he is not going to get rested as often as some of the others, because they're surely going to want to use him as often as they can, and has had some impact as well. So for the last 4 matches, his minutes per shot is actually better than Ings. So he's had a shot every 41.3 minutes, and Ings has had a shot every 42.5. Ings has slightly more in the box, and Ings has a slightly higher accuracy as well. So I'm not saying that Minamino is better than Ings, but he certainly likes to shoot quite a lot as a midfielder, of course. His goal conversion rate is way bigger than Ings is. His goal conversion rate is 33.3%. So every time he shoots, there's a 33% chance it's going to go in the net. Whereas with Ings, it's just 12.5%. So there is a lot to like about Minamino, in that I feel like he's a bit, if you've got space for this kind of luxury punt, I can't see him getting rotated. He's fresh to the team, so in a way, people don't really know how to defend against him, because he hasn't played for quite some time. And he just brings that exuberance and energy that I think the rest of the team, it'd be harder for them to bring it in the same way, because they've kind of been backs against the walls for quite some time, like people going down injured left, right and centre, losing 9-0. And he's a new face in that camp. And I think that if he got like a double figure haul out of this double game week, I wouldn't be tremendously shocked, to be honest.
That's interesting. I mean, that 33% conversion rate sounds like an overperformance compared to Ings, but that might take some time to come down.
In terms
of identifying players, especially that can hurt Leeds, again, looking at it from a Leeds angle, a bit biased, clearly. I think most of what you've said backs up the fact that I think Southampton will score against us. Interestingly, we haven't played Southampton yet this season. And we know they've been off recently. They've looked, you know, they've had injuries. They've conceded a lot of goals. But at their pomp, they're probably the type of team that could really hurt us. Mm. Really good pressing, which is, as we've shown, if you press us well, you'll force us into mistakes, which is what we saw. It was really the mistakes that conceded us the goals, but the pressing that caused the mistakes against Arsenal. If they can do that to us, and then a Redmond, an Ings, a Minamino or whatever can actually take advantage, because again, as we mentioned, individual quality. It's not hard to beat Leeds. You just need the players to do it. I could see them scoring for sure. Not to mention, if Vestergaard is back, we know we're not the best at defending set pieces.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I think the thing with those who aren't wildcarding, and you're looking at Leeds or Southampton, which to invest more in, Leeds have the edge, I think, because they have the favourable fixtures. They've got much more choice here. I think with Southampton, you've got some differential punts, but it's mainly Ings you're looking at. It's worth pointing out, though, that at some point this week, it's very likely we will get news of future double game weeks. So it could be, if Ings has multiple double game weeks, he could be a good investment this week anyway to get in. And just think of the Chelsea game as just a bonus to get in for a player that you'd probably want to get in anyway. So there to think of. But we've had a few more questions about other players as well. Those like Seb who've just wildcarded or considering wildcarding, and those who aren't. Obviously, with every player you're considering getting in, there has to be sacrifices. And a great way of climbing up the table is spotting the well-owned players that are poorly performing. Not underperforming, they're poorly performing. And so you can get an edge by getting a lower-owned player. So we've obviously seen that, say, for example, with Gundogan, for a while was much lower-owned. He's much better owned now, but obviously when he was lower owned, you know, you reap the rewards there by getting him in instead of perhaps another player. So I put a tweet up earlier this week, and I've got, you know, I think it's getting on for nearly 400 likes. My tweets don't get 400 likes, so when they do, I think, oh, okay, maybe this is a topic to discuss. So I put up a picture of Fernandes getting 9 points and Salah getting 7 points. Liverpool had 7 minutes of madness where Leicester completely hammered them, but you know, they were doing okay for the rest of the match. But nevertheless, they lost. It was a poor loss for Liverpool. Fernandes, his side drawing with West Brom, and that was, you know, that was, we thought that was going to be a huge haul. But nevertheless, Fernandes comes away with it with 9 points, Salah with 7 points. And I just said, even when the sides play poorly, they help out our FPL teams, two giants of FPL. And obviously, clearly, lots of people agreed with that. But I've also seen lots of other tweets and various other messages on forums of people playing FPL who want to get rid of these types of players because they're looking at other players. They're looking at Kane, perhaps De Bruyne coming back as a player to get in. So the questions we've got to ask, Craig says, which of Fernandes or Salah is expendable on a wild card this week? So in the frame to be dumped. FPL Richie, for those of us without Son and Kane, surely one of Salah or Fernandes makes way. My other spot is Grealish. So he's not considering getting rid of Grealish. So before I ask Seb and David what they think about these expendable shields, I've got some stats here. So this is the underlying stats, last four matches of the top 10 most well-owned outfield players. So Martinez is in here. Obviously, you're measuring the skills of Martinez in a different way. He saves a lot, and I don't expect any of these guys to. So at the top, Gundogan, expected goal involvement, well over four goals, created five big chances, doing excellently. If he is injured, obviously, you know, time to move him on if he is injured for the long term. But nevertheless, it shows how good he is. But what is interesting is Salah is second. So the second best performer in terms of expected goal involvement over the last four game weeks, second to Gundogan, is Salah. He's had five big chances and he's been expected to be involved in over three goals there. Third is Bruno Fernandes. He's only had one big chance, but he's expected to be involved in over three goals there. In fact, he has scored three goals, as the stats show. And that I find interesting because people are thinking of getting rid of them. But I wonder if they're thinking of that because they want a shiny new toy. Salah and Fernandes, as I said, they're helping out our FPL teams, even if their sides are playing badly. Bamford is in fourth, expected goal involvement. Well over two goals, scored a couple of goals. So he is performing well. He's only 6.8, remember. Think of him in isolation. Calvert-Lewin, when he's fit, is still a good prospect. Scored a couple of goals, expected to score a couple of goals. And then you start moving down to the likes of Kane and Son. They're much further down that list. Son is expected to have been involved in barely a goal over the last four game weeks. Kane, obviously, has been... This is over the last four matches, sorry. So this is the four matches they played, hence Kane's been injured. Kane as well is much lower. He's expected to be involved in less than a couple of goals. And then you're starting getting, within that group, you've got the likes of Cresswell and Cancelo. So you're getting these attack-minded defenders. So Cresswell's expected to be involved in just over a goal. Cancelo just under a goal. So they're mixing with the likes of Bamford, Calvert-Lewin, doing that same kind of picture. But right at the bottom of the list is Grealish. And Aston Villa and Grealish's attacking stats are dropped off a blooming cliff ever since I got Grealish in 3 or 4 weeks ago. I've got an assist out of him over that time. He's 7.8. He's taken up a midfield slot. He's had no big chances. He's expected to be involved in around three quarters of a goal. I'm not sure what three quarters of a goal looks like, but Grealish is scoring that. his actual goals, none. Expected goals, non-penalty. 16th of a goal? Is that a thing? Chances created, 9. So his assist potential is still there. But the rest of it, he's not competing. Salah and Fernandes, the stats, the eye test, tell me they are competing. Grealish is not competing. So that's my conclusion for that. So back to FPL Richie. For those of us without Son and Kane, surely one of Salah or Fernandes makes way. My other spot is Grealish. Get rid of Grealish. But Aston Villa got lots of double game weeks coming up. So he's facing a situation like I am at the moment. I've got Grealish, but is he taking up a spot? Expendable shield. Seb, what do you reckon? Expendable shields.
I mean, on Grealish, I think you're right. And their defensive stats have declined a bit as well, if I remember. I think Grealish is the one just because the doubles and the potential fixtures. I maybe just want that in there for the opportunity. Salah and Fernandes pretty much top of that table. I think we have to take into account obviously their price here and whether we're going to captain them, because with a player of that price, I need to be able to give them the armband. And even though they are returning points, and Bruno Fernandes created zero chances against West Brom, by the way, although scored a brilliant goal, so maybe it doesn't matter. But I'm not going to captain either of those players in quite a little while. I have Fernandes, I don't have Salah. I had to choose to lose one of them if I wanted to have Sterling, who I want to make KDB. I very badly want KDB back. I want Son. I want the option of also getting Kane. I've got Ings. I've got, you know, my three Leeds players. I had to sacrifice someone. And I chose Salah, not because he won't score points, but because I don't think he'll score enough, especially without the armband, to make up for what I'll make elsewhere.
I'm actually going to go the other way, and so I own both Salah and Fernandes now. And as I was alluding to earlier, like I'm really reticent to sell either of them. But if I was forced to sell one of them, I would probably be actually looking at Fernandes just because of the fixtures. Because the way that Man United season's panned out, we're expecting fewer double game weeks from them in the next few weeks than we would be for Liverpool and for some of these other guys. The fixtures that they've got are actually pretty horrible, to be honest, Man United. So after the Newcastle game, which I'm definitely not getting rid of Fernandes for that, you've got Chelsea and Man City away. And that's really tough, especially when you consider the way that Man United tend to set up in these bigger games. Even under Solskjaer, he has a little bit of Mourinho in him there somewhere. Because you look at some of the big games they've played recently, Man United, Arsenal, 0-0. Liverpool, 0-0, Man City, 0-0, and Chelsea, 0-0 this season. And you just get nothing out of Fernandes because United aren't adventurous enough in those games to warrant having him there. And the thing is, one thing that I think is one of his most impressive features that goes under the radar a little bit in the fantasy community, which is not knocking it, of course, because we're all after the goals and assists, what he does for that team, he's so good off the ball, and the way that he helps kind of grab everyone by the scruff of the neck and get his roll his sleeves up and get his hands dirty, like winning the ball back. He's really good at that. And then so sometimes he gets turned to doing that in these big games, and he gets told he's not a big game player, but I think he is. He's just in these big games, he's getting asked to do something that we don't like. Mm-hmm. And there's not, we can't say that's wrong, because to be honest, to get the 0-0s against Man City and Chelsea this season for Man United was probably an impressive achievement based on the fact that, you know, their defensive, I don't think they're that great defensively, United, and haven't been for a long time. So that's always going to be there for these games. And whereas Liverpool, Everton at home, Everton's defence hasn't been very good. Sheffield United is always a bit of a tricky thing. You always get fewer points than you expect in those games, but it's still not bad enough to sell. Fulham, again, are kind of a similar team. But when you look at if it's a choice between Fernandes and Salah, you've got Fernandes against Chelsea and Man City versus Salah against Sheffield United and Fulham. I'd be more expectative of, say, a penalty, mm-hmm. if we're thinking about that as a difference maker against two teams that are threatened with relegation. You know, we've seen a lot of these teams down the bottom end of the table. They're normally the ones that give up the penalties against the players that know how to stretch them and ask questions. So for me, between those two, it would be a Salah keep and a Fernandes sell. But at the same time, that's me answering this question on the Scoutcast. That's very, very different to sitting there with my actual team and selling Fernandes to one of these other guys.
I think I was just going to say, I probably agree with your analysis, but I was a week earlier in my decision. So I had Man United against West Brom, which is probably just why I went for Fernandes over Salah, because I wanted that West Brom match. Going forward, I think you're probably right. And depending on what we see with this week with injuries, I would even be tempted to lose Bruno as well, if it got me, say, a KDB in. I'm not making a transfer this week, but if I, you know, if Gundogan's out for a bit, maybe I get a cheaper player there and have Sterling and De Bruyne. But I think, as you say, it's close, and it maybe depends on your situation.
I'm going to keep Fernandes and Salah because I think I can just... Because they're, I don't think at the moment they're expendable shields. They're ticking along nicely. As I said, 9 points, 7 points this week. Team's not playing particularly well, and so I think, you know, they're both on penalties. They can get those at any time. I think they are shields I'm prepared to keep. I've got a player in the bank at the moment. I don't know who that player is, but name me a player that's 7 million. But I'm sitting there with 7 million in the bank, and so we've got the likes of Kane, KDB, all these players I can get in. I don't need to get rid of them. So if you don't need to get rid of them, don't. But if you do, then I think what David's saying around the fixtures Fernandez, arguably on paper, would be the one of the two to go. But it is a tough one. I mean, I'm looking at these underlying stats here. I'm looking at, you know, the eye test, looking at them. And double game weeks are annoying because Grealish should go. He doesn't deserve a place in our teams at the moment. But then looking at Son and Kane, I don't think pairing them up is deserving of a case. So I'm looking at, say, the next double game week, say, with Spurs playing. And I'm looking at just getting Kane in, maybe captaining him. I don't know, depending on, you know, what the fixtures are and Kane's performance. But getting Kane and Son when we've got all these other amazing players, I'm not so sure. Also, I've got a bench boost still to play and I don't know when I want to use it. And I think the bench boost is really bad. I think it's a really annoying chip that alters the way you play the game. And it alters the way I play the game. I like to plan. And so, for example, game week 29, I want to keep some Leeds players, maybe a West Ham player. I've got the bench for that. So it makes me think I don't want to use the bench boost. But then I've got the bench boost in the back pocket. So I think I'm just going to use the bench boost probably when I wildcard around game week 30, 31. I'll find fixtures there where a single game week bench boost will be advantageous. But at the moment, it's a weight around my neck. I don't like it at all.
I would say on the bench boost, I think, as you're clearly planning to do, and I know some people did well with it this week, You aren't forced into playing it. I'm planning to use it in 26,
But
I'm not going to do it if it doesn't look good. So I've got transfers. If I can make those transfers to get a good bench boost, I will. If injuries come along, I'll leave it. There are going to be other opportunities. We're going to see other doubles. We're going to see strong benches even without doubles.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, the players we have in our team. So I don't think you need to force yourself into using it. I think you can just use it when the moment looks right.
Yeah. And we saw people forced to use it when Leeds were playing Brighton, single game week for them. Everyone got it in their heads they were going to use a bench boost in game week, whatever it was. And so they just did it. And, you know, and it was a single game where Leeds didn't actually perform as well as they were expected to. Just one of those things. So it fell flat. And a double game week, you know, on the theory, they're going to play twice. I think you're wise to consider it, definitely, for game week 26, because so many teams will play twice.
But you were talking about, you know, the shields and what players we lose, I guess. If you're holding your bench boost as well, you're obviously incentivized to keep some money in the bench itself. If we're looking at not losing Salah and Fernandes like yourself, you probably have to sacrifice Son, Kane, as you're saying, you might not get both of them. If you do have a cheaper bench, maybe you can squeeze those players in. Really, for me, if I had all the funds in the world, I'd have Salah and Fernandes. I'm not saying get rid of either of them. It's a budgetary thing for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll just put a picture of my team up, gaming 24-1. Not just because I'm showing I've got 100 points, but look at the bad bit. Right,
99, Joe.
99 points. 99, look in the corner there. Mitchell, no points. He's 3.9. He's been there forever, and he's not going. So that's why I can think about getting these other players in and not having to sacrifice, because I've got the likes of Mitchell there. And if your bench is all, you know, good bench, because you're going to bench boost, well, then you don't have that option there. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. Who will come out on top of that? It's hard to tell.
It's interesting also, because you've mentioned there, the flip side of that is what the impact that has on when you play a wild card as well. So a lot of people are trying to work out when they play their bench boost so they can work out when to wild card, on the logic of, could there be a benefit to stacking your bench as a dead end and then wild carding to a scenario where you actually have more sort of like mobility and flexibility in having some of these better players? Because I think, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm not going to do this, but I'm certainly very appreciative of the logic that if you bench boost after you wildcard, you might have to make some, to get the best bench boost out of a wildcarded squad, you have to, when you use your last opportunity to change all your players and take no hits, get a bench that damages possibly your main squad, as sort of that Seb you've mentioned there. Like if you, it might force your hand into having to not have to go without Kane or Son to make your bench better. So I think that's something people have to think about as well with their chip strategy, is if there's a route that allows you to bench boost in a way that looks effective before you wildcard, there could be some advantage to that, because then your squad for the run-in is never kind of weighed down.
I mean, I think for those like me who are considering wildcarding after the blank game week, that strategy just doesn't fall nicely in place, annoyingly, because we're using our benches for cheap players at, say, West Ham or Leeds, for the double game weeks when they're not playing twice. Then they can come into their own during the blank. So ideally, you're not setting up to dead end your team on a great bench boost. You're just sitting it up to dead end your team on a, you know, flexible, cheap bench that you can just put in. I just think the way the season's going, the way I always think, like, with strategies and the way people play the game is very different. And I play in a particular way, and whether it ends up getting more points or less points, I wouldn't enjoy it if I played it another way. So I'm just going to play it my way, and whether that brings in points, green arrows or not, so be it. But at least I'll have done it my way, as Frank Sinatra and Sid Vicious once sang.
I was going to say, can't you sing that for us?
Yeah. One team I would love to point out is Leicester. We've obviously looked at Villa's form maybe declining, but they do have good fixtures. The reason I would be interested in them is because they potentially have good doubles coming up with good fixtures. We see that Leicester have some okay fixtures, I believe, ahead. And I know Vardy, I don't think he appears on your table there, but possibly because of reduced minutes.
Well, let's put those fixtures up while you're saying that. It's a good segue. So
I think Vardy comes out quite well if you go per minute rather than just absolute numbers. And then you were mentioning you had a 7 million slot in your squad. There's Barnes, there's Madison. Is that someone we should maybe be looking at? For the double myself, I was originally considering Justin in as one of my transfers, and Ricardo Pereira interests me.
So
I actually sold Barnes to get Sterling this week, which is just I instantly wanted him back. He's been really helpful for me over that period. I just felt that the Liverpool game, you know, and the kind of allure of Sterling. Barnes is certainly on my radar.
So the picture we've got up on the screen is the season ticker for the next four fixtures, which includes the double game week that we've got in game week 25. We don't know the double game weeks in for 26 yet. For this section, it's just worth pointing out that we're partnered with Football Index, and so there may also be players to look at buying through that format. So with Football Index, you can buy and sell shares in players using fancy football knowledge with the aim to make a profit. What we've got up here is the season ticket. It's sorted by difficulty. So the absolute top team to invest in pure fixtures, not form, fixtures, is Southampton. Chelsea and Leeds next. Then they have Everton, Sheffield United and Brighton. I actually think that Brighton's quite a tough cookie to crack at the moment. And same with Sheffield United, it could be. And who knows with Everton. So I'm not sure they're going to be top. But nevertheless, they do have favourable fixtures on paper. Crystal Palace are there. Brighton, Fulham, Tottenham and West Brom they've got next. It's all going to depend on Zaha back. If Zaha's not back, don't bother. Leeds, I think this is more realistic. Wolves and Southampton, great double. Then they got Villa, then they got West Ham and then they got Chelsea. So their next four fixtures are great. The next four matches, rather, are great. Obviously, game week 29 game week 28 takes a bit of a hit with that Chelsea game. And then you've got West Brom. You know, if you're interested in West Brom, Burnley, Brighton, Newcastle.
Diagne's been...
He is.
I sort of wonder if people sign Diagne.
Yeah.
Just one letter away from Bowie, who's actually in pretty
just
decent form.
He's just a typo away from a fullback position. And then we've got Liverpool here. And this is why I'm keen on keeping Salah. So he's got Everton. And Everton defence have been quite poor. And so has Liverpool's. Then they got Sheffield United. And then they got Fulham. And then Wolves. And then there's that Leicester that Seb was mentioning. They got Villa, Arsenal, Brighton and Sheffield United. It's a good run. I think investment in the likes of Barnes, Vardy, Jamie Vardy as well, could be quite shrewd. Nice differentials. Don't get clouded by the double game weeks. Just think who's good, who's on form, who's got good fixtures. And that's Leicester. Brighton and their defence magically is performing as they were expected. And that's expected in terms of expected stats. Crystal Palace, West Brom, Leicester and Southampton. Then you've got Tottenham, West Ham, Burnley, Crystal Palace and then Arsenal. So good set of fixtures there, especially the Arsenal one, I would say, as a derby. But then when you're looking a bit further down, we can see why David was talking about possibly Fernandes being expendable. Yes, they have Newcastle at home next, but then Chelsea and Man City, the two toughest defences at the moment, and then West Ham United, who are very capable stopping any side. And Fulham right the way down there as well. They've got Liverpool, Man City in the next four. Arsenal, horror fixtures. City, Leicester, Burnley and Tottenham. And I say, see, I think I look at the Arsenal-Tottenham get the derby as better for Tottenham than Arsenal for some reason in my head. But, you know, I'm sure Arsenal fans might have a go at me about that. And then West Ham right at the bottom. And this is why I'm thinking, nevertheless, that they play in blank game week 29. They've got West Ham have got Tottenham, City, Leeds, Manchester United. So I think the likes of Soufal, Souček, Antonio and his hamstrings, it could be time for them to go. I might keep one for the blank game week just to see, but I'm going to start moving them on, really. I think it's time. But yeah, looking at those fixtures, either you two, you're looking, I mean, Seb's already mentioned Leicester. Anything else spring to mind?
There's one player I'd like to call out, maybe more than a team, is Marcus Alonso. Maybe we wait 3 or 4 weeks. I think off the top of my head, they have very nice fixtures after 30.
Yeah.
And okay, we know there's possibly a chance he plays plays 2 in 3, maybe misses one. But he looks like the better choice over Chilwell as far as Tuchel is concerned. And if he does play, we know the weapon he can be.
Yeah, David, what you're looking at these fixtures and I mean the next 4 or 5 and anything spring to mind?
Yeah, I don't think there's too much more than what you've already mentioned other than the doubles that we may get. You know, in the next couple of days could change my mind on a few of these things. You know, we'd certainly shoot Aston Villa higher up the list if we're expecting them to get the games that they're having, which we kind of already talked about with Grealish already, haven't we? The thing is, on this particular subject, I've used the season ticker slightly less this season than before. Not that I knock it at all. I think it's a fantastic tool, but it's more just riding the season as it is. I found it really hard to plan beyond like 2 weeks, 3 weeks this season.
Also, home and away is out the window, isn't it?
yeah, exactly. So then there's a lot of factors we would normally rely on. So I think that we have to kind of ride the waves as they come, usually with very short notice before we make a lot of our decisions. So yeah, that's still something I'm doing now. I don't have a plan in place. I don't want to put one in place because I don't like kind of setting everything up and then it all tumbling down because of a fixture announcement. So yeah, it's annoying because I actually love planning. Anyone who's kind of like heard the advice that I like to give on these videos over the last number of years, I love spotting these swings and going over the fixture list. But unfortunately, just the scenario and the circumstance that the world has kind of thrown at us, it's you have to kind of ride the terrain a little bit more than usual.
Before I ask David for a differential pick, I just want to say that with the Football Index, they've got a 7-day, £500 money-back guarantee. There's a link in the description below to sign up, as well as a link to check out full terms and conditions. This is for 18 plus only, and please gamble responsibly. Please do check out BeGambleAware.org, and there's a link for this as well in the description as well. So last week, I picked Rafinha, which was a bit of a cheat, really, because we all know he's really good, but hardly anyone's teams. He'll be in a few more teams, but he's not going to be in that many more teams. He got an assist and he's got a double next. Good differential, I think. So David's turn next. Follow that. Who is the best low-owned 5% or under gem for the next 4 matches?
Well, yeah, I mean, tough act to follow, I think, because, Fidio, I think, is going to do well this week. May have even picked him if you hadn't picked him last week. But, you know, that's fine. I won't hold it against you, Joe. I originally came into this thinking I was going to go with Harrison when I was looking at some of the stats we looked earlier about how bad Southampton have been on that side. Obviously, Seb has mentioned that Harrison might not necessarily always be in that area of the pitch. And, I've actually talked myself into going with Minamino instead, because we're looking at the last 4 weeks, we're looking at the next 4 weeks, and I prefer Southampton's fixtures at the moment as they are on paper to Harrison's as well. And while you were going through the fixture ticker, I was just bringing up one final comparison to lock that in using minutes per expected goal involvement over the last 4 matches, where I can see that Minamino, one every 219.5 minutes, which isn't amazing, but it's better than Harrison's of 315.2. So that was the clincher. I think with the fixtures they've got and the fact that he's quite a good player and he loves a shot more than the Ings, apparently, at the moment. It's a small sample size we're basing this on, which to me suggests there could be more to come because, you know, he's not quite in the rhythm of things yet, but I think he will be. He suits Southampton's style perfectly. In terms of the high press and the energy that they go with. So, Minamino is my differential.
I said Stones, Loughton, Minamino. These are going to be the double game week heroes. So yeah, I think he's fair enough. Every time he plays, he looks like he cares. He looks like he wants to score.
He's got a lot to prove, to be fair. Yeah. You know, he's gone to Liverpool with a thoroughly deserved transfer. Mm. I would argue he's not been used enough. You know, maybe there's something behind the scenes that I'm not aware of that Jurgen Klopp is. I'm sure that's absolutely believable, bearing in mind he's a much better manager than me. But there is definitely something for him to prove. Southampton is the best place for him to prove it. So if he doesn't start hitting the ground running soon, then arguably his future at Liverpool is on the line more than just Southampton. So, okay. Yeah, he's got to do it.
Okay.
When you first said it, I wanted to say no, but I think that's more because it's not a name we've heard a lot, because it's not something we're seeing in the fantasy sphere, because like you say, he was maybe not playing at Liverpool. We weren't aware of him. That's probably quite a good example of just me falling for a cognitive bias of going, that's not in my frame of reference, so no, I reject it. But really, when you look at, you know, the facts you've presented, I don't hate it. Fair enough.
Wow. I'll settle for I don't hate it. I'll take that.
To be honest, he's better than Grealish as an FPL asset at the moment. And people will go, well, talking about, well, he is
exactly, that's the thing, which he is, though, so used to just going, you know, Grealish is a name,
yeah,
you sort of gravitate towards that, don't you? But I guess that's the point of a differential, find points that other people aren't finding.
Okay, let's move on to game week 25 and our transfer and captaincy plans. So I'll go first. I've already alluded to it, but I've got Ederson in goal, Loughton playing West Brom, Dallas and Stones. I've got the vice captain on Dallas at the moment just because he's got two fixtures, but I haven't made my moves yet. I've also got Grealish, Fernandes, Salah, Gundogan, Antonio, Calvert-Lewin and Bamford is my captain at the moment. On my bench, Jed Steers somehow still there. Mitchell, I've mentioned, Suchek and Koufal. So what I'm looking to do is one of Suchek and Gundogan, if Gundogan is injured for a significant length of time, will go to Rafinha. That's definite. Then I will be looking to double game week announcements. If Southampton get a double game week in 26 or 27 as well as 25, yeah, Danny Ings is going to come in for one of Antonio and Calvert-Lewin. Probably Antonio, because if Calvert-Lewin is fit, I do fancy Calvert-Lewin against that Liverpool defence, especially some of the way they're communicating with each other at the moment. Liverpool's defence, I would like to have Calvert-Lewin against that. So Antonio would probably go for me for Ings. And that's probably what I'll do. I'm not going to take any hits there. And then the following week, I'll be looking at whichever of Calvert-Lewin and Antonio I don't get rid of to Kane, Harry Kane. And that may be my lot for double game week 26. But let's see the fixtures. That's for next week's Scoutcast. So that's me. Seb, just for the benefit of those listening on the podcast, you've got Pope, Ayling, Cancelo, Shaw, Rafinha, Son, Sterling, Gundogan, Fernandes, Bamford, your captain at the moment, Ings as well, Martinez, Watkins, Loughton and Digne on the bench. So you're not making any changes, are you? I mean, that's great. And you've got Loughton against West Brom on your bench.
I will make no transfers. No. If Gundogan's injured, I'll probably just play someone from the bench. I want two transfers for next week so that I can make at least two for the doubles. That was part of the plan that I laid out. I knew who I was bringing in. I can take a -4 if I need to. And this is, I think, the only time up until game week 29 that Luke Ayling will play for me, which is one of the other reasons I went for him over, say, a Dallas.
Yeah.
I just want a 4.4 on my bench the rest of the time. I just have him for the double.
Okay.
And then on captain, I think we said it's a toss-up, isn't it?
Yeah.
That might change. It will definitely be Bamford or Rafinha.
Yeah.
And the vice-captain will be not someone from one of those teams, just in case something happens.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about as well. I might still do that. I don't know. They are the two best captaincy shouts, I think. But Fernandes against Newcastle at home, not too shabby. David, let's look at your team. You've got Pope, Maguire, Cancelo, Dallas, and then Sterling, Fernandes, Gundogan, Salah, Calvert-Lewin, Bamford, your captain, and Antonio. And on your bench, you've got Target, Koufal, Anguissa, and McCarthy. So
yeah, I'm not goalkeeper. I've got such a big decision to make because it's tough. I wouldn't be massively shocked if Pope outscored McCarthy, because McCarthy seems to have kind of formed tail off a bit. You know, no save points in either the last two games. Southampton's defence looking quite poor. It really relies on him getting the saves in those games to justify starting him over Pope, who against West Brom I think, can keep a clean sheet and get saves now, because West Brom are starting to pose a bit more of a threat, but not enough to me to make me think that that Burnley can't keep a clean sheet. So it's a tough decision. I'm just not sold on it. I've had McCarthy for a while. So
What if Ben Mee's still out?
Yeah, that maybe makes a difference. But in a way, Pope is Pope. I think he can keep clean sheets behind quite a lot of. I mean, Burnley's defence has hardly been non-obliging this year, even when they've had Mee in the team. We've been looking at some of the stats that they've recorded over some periods, and they have been, even going into that double game week, they're in like the bottom six for XGC, I think. But it doesn't mean as much when you've got a goalkeeper like Pope, who I believe is still top of the league this year for XG prevented. So it's a tough decision, because I just wouldn't be shocked if Pope outscored McCarthy. So it's a tough call for me to make. And in a way, I brought Pope in for the double game week thinking, oh, this would be nice. It will give me competition for places in the next game week. And now I hate myself from a week ago.
So what transfers are you planning? You mentioned about Rafinha possibly.
Yeah. Rafinha is probably the most likely in terms of how I do it. Like I said, it is a little bit challenging because it probably comes down to Gundogan and how long he's out for. The problem with Pep is how often do we get like a proper prognosis in terms of like how long they're going to be out for. It's quite rare that we get that. If it's longer than, if we get not much, it means he's probably not out for a long length of time. KDB coming back maybe makes a difference, but I don't want to be brave enough to just sell Gundogan now before I've seen him and De Bruyne play in the same team again, because Gundogan was even playing this more advanced role when De Bruyne was there, when De Bruyne was playing false nine, I think, against Chelsea. So there's still the possibility that Gundogan can be good. Maybe he's even better when KDB comes back, if they're getting better service to a guy that's basically running in to stand underneath the crossbar quite a lot of the time. So it's a really tough decision to ditch Gundogan for Rafinha if the information I get from Guardiola isn't concrete, or it is concrete and it's like he's going to miss one game. So that for me is hard. My backup plan in terms of how to get Rafinha would probably be to sell Anguissa and downgrade someone else, probably Maguire. But again, that's going to be hard to do against Newcastle. It would be more in terms of a long-term view with those tougher fixtures they have. Mm. You know, the problem is, which is frustrating, is I want Ings as well. But in terms of reaching him, again, that's hard because I'm going to have to downgrade somewhere. And I'm just not sure where that's going to be. Maybe it's Fernandes. But again, that isn't going to be this week because their fixture this week is quite good. And I already own Calvert-Lewin.
Have you got one or two transfers?
I've just got one transfer and 0.7 in the bank. So I'm actually kind of tempted. I could also just do nothing because, and then maybe I could get rid of Antonio if he's going to be out for a bit longer. But in terms of the replacement, again, it's hard to get to someone I like in one move.
You know me, I don't take a lot of risks, but if I was ever to take a -8, and I think I've taken one this season, this looks like Anguissa, Calvert-Lewin and Antonio out for Rafinha, Ings and whatever you got left. That looks like, and I think you would get profit from that, from Ings and Rafinha alone.
I could do. I mean, the problem is, I again, this is something I learned from you actually, Joe, if we're gonna sort of play tactics and that sort of thing, is I don't like selling a guy if I feel like he can get something in that game week.
Yeah.
And Calvert-Lewin, as we've already said, if he is fit, because a lot of the decisions I've got to make are very much press conference dependent. Yeah. If Calvert-Lewin is fit, I don't really want to sell him for this Liverpool game because I think he can get something. And
yeah, more
Antonio,
if
he's fit and firing and not tweeting about his love life, then he's going to be in a situation where I still think he can get something. So I hate it when we are at these point crossroads in a season where in order to get to other players who I'm maybe not even sold on, I have to sell players that I have some faith in. It's really tough. So that's why I think I might even just do nothing, because I don't mind going into this game week with not that many double game week players. If it means it puts me in a better position to reshape for the bigger game week. Of course, I could wildcard right now, but I really do just want to hold that for a little bit later. Yeah. So.
Seb, what do you think?
That was going to be my question.
Yeah.
That was going to be my question about the wildcard. So I guess it's a case of, because it's so easy just to focus on that next game week and go, because me, I should have a team that is set up almost optimally because I wildcarded last week with literally these fixtures in mind. I planned it all out. So injuries might change that and that's fine. But you're in the opposite position. So unless you're going to wildcard, you probably shouldn't have the ideal team for this week, and probably trying to force yourself into it could cause you problems down the line. Like, I don't hate Joe's moves. I'd be tempted myself, but you probably need to know what you're going to do in 26, 27, 28, 29 before you can make this decision. Because if you say, for example, you have the free hit and therefore don't have to have Leeds players for 29 in your team already, maybe you don't want to take -4 getting Rafinha now because he's only really useful for this one week, and then you wouldn't use him anyway. So I think it's a balance.
Yeah, exactly. It, my chip strategy is, it's not set in stone, kind of what I mentioned earlier, in terms of I can't, this isn't the season to set it in stone for like 3 or 4 weeks in advance. And I am sort of tempted because I've spent the last few weeks, I pay a mortgage now at the target bench club. He's been on my bench so often, and it's only through my own luck and from Antonio overexerting himself a little bit too much that he's going to come in. So there has been quite a lot of times where the team I've got right now could maybe not that far. It's not that far away from bench boostable in 26, and then that might allow me to. Part of me likes the idea of taking a few hits to get a nice bench boost squad for 26 without the wild card, and then play the wild card afterwards, knowing that I don't have to stack my bench anymore, and I can afford to get a Mitchell or a Kilman or something like that to sit in the corner. So that's at the back of my mind.
Koufal could go for a Villa, another Villa defender. Can you get a Villa? Yeah, you could go for it.
Yeah, I've only got target right now. So, yeah, I mean, that's doable too. I think I'm at one of these tough positions where there's so many different routes I could take that are all very, very different.
That's why I'm asking questions about it. I'm intrigued by this. It's like 1982 and someone's handing me a Rubik's Cube and I'm going, ooh, what's this
doing? I wonder if it's worth looking at. So 26 is probably the big one we're all looking at, regardless of Leeds this coming week. And just ignore your current team and build a team within budget that you would want for 26. And maybe mix in a little bit there of, you know, what players would I want to hold after 26 as well? And maybe that starts giving you the clue of how close is my team to that. What should I be moving towards? Because you could easily fall into the trap of spending points on getting the ideal 25 team and then being further away from the team you actually want for the rest of the season.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I think it's not to do Leeds or Southampton any injustice, because I think they're great teams who can get good points out of this game week. But if there's one double game week out of the ones we've had recently and the ones coming up that I could kind of swerve getting sucked into, this would be the one I would choose, because there's only a double game week for two teams. So and there's some decent single game week fixtures available too. So yeah, I mean, what it maybe all boils down to, how many times have we seen people go with, if in doubt, just do nothing, hold a transfer? It gives me a better chance of reshaping the team I want for 26 without having to take hits. With the team this week I don't hate, I might just do that. But as I said, it will come down to those press conferences. If Calvert-Lewin's ruled out, if Antonio's ruled out, then I've got decisions to make. I'm going to have to make them now. So it's very much TBC.
Okay, just before we go, I want to remind people about the members area at Fantasy Football Scout. That's something we've been drawing a lot on for our expected stats. In particular, but also all sorts of stats, and the comparison tool as well is very, very useful. I didn't get a chance to put a picture up on my goals imminent table, but do check that out in the members area. Nathan Redmond, I'm sure, will be there. Do check that out. Please also do to subscribe, so you can keep up to date with our latest videos and podcasts. And press like if you've enjoyed this episode. In the meantime, it's a goodbye from me.
So goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye, all.